Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Top Flight Time Machine are going to be going on tour in early November. You will experience physical movement and emotional movement and so much more from both of us.
Bowel movement?
Maybe there'll be a little bit of bowel movement. I can't promise it, but if that's what you're looking for, we can make it happen probably. It won't be one of those things where a podcast episode is recorded in a theatre. Fuck that. This is a proper show with songs and dancing and high moments of exhilaration. So come along. Let's just quickly tell you where we're going to be. The 1st of November, we're in Brighton. 2nd of November, we're in Nottingham. The 3rd, we're in Leeds. The 5th, we're in Manchester. The 7th, we're in Glasgow. The 8th, we're in Newcastle. The 9th, we're in Birmingham. And the 10th, we're in London.
The capital.
What a finale.
It's going to be good. I think there's a few tickets left at most venues. Yep. It's going to be really exciting. It's called the Velvet Drainpipe Tour. It's going to be better than the last one,
yeah.
Which is saying something, because the last one was fucking amazing. Ask anyone who went. But this one, whoa, it's going to knock your cock off. Or if you're a lady, it will knock off your boobs.
Go to tftimemachine.com/liveshows to have a look at where you get tickets from.
There'll also be a chance to interact with us in an official capacity while we're on stage, not after the show.
In a very limited capacity. Come along, you'll love it.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Tune Machine. I'm Andy Hotbody Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney, so what?
Welcome along, it's another Tune Machine episode. We've activated the random pop blob, and it's produced a chart for us to carefully analyse, and we'll hand over to the pop blob now to announce the chart for us. Random blob, open your gob, tell us how to do our job.
Third of June, 1970.
Again, there, the blob slightly inflating its role, I think.
As always.
In this preposterous conceit.
It's probably got on the gear like ResultSpot did. Yeah, they all do once they've got a bit of attention. Yeah. It's how they cope with the pressure.
Well, we keep ourselves grounded, being yourself, don't we? Generally. Yeah. But the side characters in this get carried away quite quickly, quite easily. It's sad. It's sad. It'll lead to tragedy. But it always does. But there you go. We can advise them as much as we can.
They can't take the pressure of it all.
Exactly. We can advise them. We've been through it all. Me and you.
Yeah.
With our media careers.
We've both been to hell and back on more than one occasion.
Yeah, exactly. But they'll learn, or they won't. Mm. So it's the 3rd of June, 1970. I mean, this is before both of us were born. We've got kind of an unofficial boundary of years that we'll cover, and 1970 is the kind of first year. We're not prepared to go back any further than that. And the blob.
We can't go back to the swinging 60s.
The blob, which is supposed to be random, let's not forget, I feel, has stitched us up a little bit here. It's kind of gone.
He's gone to itself. Let's see what you can make of this, pair of cunts.
Oh, you reckon you could do 1970?
Weren't even fucking born.
You weren't even born. Well, here we go. Yeah. Oh, very random. Yes, Sam. Yes, Andy. Very random. I did it
randomly.
Sorry,
1970. Let's see you fill half an hour talking about these fucking songs you've never heard of. Yeah. Well, sit back and watch, blob.
30 minutes minimum. No fucking problem. Mm. So, I think we need to go and do the regular countdown of the top 40 of that week to kick things off.
Okay.
So, here we go. Down 9 at number 40. Knock, knock. Who's there? It's only fucking Mary Hopkin.
At 39, down from 24, it's The Seeker by The Who.
Straight in at number 38, Tony Joe White with Groupie Girl.
You in at 37. Ah, he's back again and he's hotter than ever. It's Cliff Richard with Goodbye Sam. Hello, Samantha.
Ooh.
Blimey.
In at 36.
Sounds like someone's had the op.
In at 36, it's a group called Free with All Right Now. I don't think we'll hear much more from that in the future.
35, up from 44, Take to the Mountains, advises Richard Barnes.
Straight in at 34, it's Arrival with I Will Survive.
At 33, down from 16, it's Travelling Band from Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Down 4 at 32, Andy Williams, He Can't Help Falling in Love.
At 31, up from 40, 9 places, it's All in the Game, say the Four Tops.
At number 30, up 4 places, it's The Guess Who with American Woman and No Sugar Tonight.
At 29, up 1 place from 30, those cheeky Status Quo boys are talking about Down the Dustpipe.
Probably a euphemism. Down 3 places at number 28, it's Simon and Garfunkel with Bridge Over Troubled Water.
At 27, down 6 places, Dana with All Kinds of Everything.
The Hollies are in trouble. Not only have they dropped 11 places to 26, they also can't tell the bottom from the top.
At 25, up 10 places, it's Jerry Monroe with Sally.
I knew a girl called Sally once. Oh, she was lovely. Up 5 at number 24, Herbert with Bet Your Life I Do.
At 23, down 1 place, it's Julie Felix with If I Could Feel, brackets, El Condor Pasa, close brackets.
Good bracket information there. Up 4 places at 22, Elvis Presley, the King of Rock and Roll. He's back with Kentucky Rain.
At 21, Johnny Cash asked the question that has confounded humans from the dawn of time. What is truth?
Oh, good question. Meanwhile, up 3 at 20, Rufus Thomas is urging us all to do the funky chicken.
Thanks, Rufus, but I'd rather not.
Too busy wondering what is truth.
At 19, down from 17, I've got you on my mind, admits White Plains.
Up 1 solitary place at 18, Don't You Know by Butterscotch. I love Butterscotch.
My brother's allergic to Butterscotch.
Oh, that's a shame.
Sometimes we would place pieces of it in amidst the box of ordinary toffee just to see his face.
Regular scotch.
His face fucking blow up like a Belisha beacon.
There was no treatment for it back in them days. He just had to walk it off.
He could have died, but that's what lent the whole episode jeopardy. At 17, up 1 place, it's Fleetwood Mac with The Green Manalishi, brackets, with the two-prong crown. Remember, this was when the Fleetwood Mac were heavily into acid.
I think someone's been smoking some Green Manalishi over there at Fleetwood Mac HQ. Down 9 places to 16, it's Frigid Pink with House of the Rising Sun.
At 15, down 10 places, it's The Move with Brontosaurus. Great name for a song.
Up 6 at 14, Marvin Gaye wants to introduce you to 3 of his friends. They're called Abraham, Martin and John.
I have it on good authority, Marvin is not gay. That's just his name.
He came up with the name back when gay was just an ordinary word.
And I'm meaning happy.
I'm led to believe he's very unhappy about the connotations it's taken on.
New in at 13, it's some characters calling themselves Mungo Jerry with a song called In the Summertime.
Up 2 at 12.
I don't like the sound of it.
Up 2
I don't trust it. I don't trust them.
If the charts are about anything, mate, it's trust.
And I've, over the years, examining the chart, let's just say I've developed an instinct for this sort of thing. And my gut's telling me they've got the whiff of untrustworthiness about
wrong-ins.
Them. Like the kind of people you'd meet in some kind of market in Marrakesh.
Now, the polar opposites of those guys are the Beach Boys, and they're up 2 places to 12 with Cotton Fields.
Roger Whittaker is at number 11 with I don't believe in if anymore. What the hell are you on about, Roger?
I think Roger's been hanging out with Fleetwood Mac. Or maybe Johnny Cash asking what is truth. Down 4 places at number 10, it's those Supremes, and they're going up the ladder to the roof.
Maybe they do a bit of roofing. I could dabble them round at my rig.
Get an estimate.
Had a terrible bit of damp recently. Need some, at least some of the tiles replacing, if not the whole roof. Going to be costly. At number 9, down 5 places, it's Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum.
Up 3 at number 8, it's the Jackson 5, and they want to teach us the ABC.
At number 7, up from 13, it's Mr. Blow with Groovin' with Mr. Blow. Now, there's a song and a guy I feel you can trust.
Up 6 at number 6, it's Ray Stevens with Everything is Beautiful. Well, I don't think I agree with that, Ray. I read an article about Cambodia the other night, and everything is not beautiful in Cambodia right now.
What's going on right there, right now, is grotesque.
Horrific.
It's inhuman. At number 5, it's Tom Jones with Daughter of Darkness.
Oh,
oh dear.
Up 1 at number 4, it's Glenn Campbell, Honey Come Back.
At number 3, it's those Moody Blues. They've got a question. Wow. The song's called Question.
Down 1 place at number 2, the England World Cup squad with Back Home.
They're a soccer team, if you didn't know.
Yep, familiar.
Not really a fan of that sport myself. And at number 1, it's someone called Christy with Yellow River, which is, of course, what you see streaming out of alleyways after chucking out time on a Friday night.
So that's the chart.
Wow.
We've
There's not many songs that I recognise in there. There are a handful. And, of course, there are some artists.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, Tom Jones at number 5. We all know Tom Jones. I am not familiar with the song Daughter of Darkness.
Yeah, exactly. There's lots of that sort of thing going on, all the way down to Cliff Richard with Goodbye, Sam, Hello, Samantha. Now,
a lot of them sound made up, don't they? Like, yeah. Chris Morris making up horse names.
I'm just going to have a look at the lyrics.
I saw Tom Jones live once.
Did you?
In Brighton. Yeah, oh. I did. It was sort of like, you know, like he came back and being students with our keen sense of irony, we were really on board with the Tom Jones revival that was going down after he'd done a cover of Kiss.
Yeah, I thought and, that was abhorrent.
It was, yeah, Tom it was Jones's abhorrent, but at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, Tom Jones, really good. I think it just got wrapped up in the student, well, the irony of Tom Jones.
He did it with the Art of Noise as well. Now, I used to love the Art of Noise when they starred, but then they went all fucking chart chasing like that and started hooking up with people like Tom Jones and fucking ruined it. But anyway.
Well, he also, I think he was maybe about to do, it was around the time that he was on the scene and he did a song with Catatonia and Kerris Matthews, didn't he?
I think Jonathan Ross and brought him back. He got him on The Last Resort, didn't he? And sort of bigged him up.
Yeah.
So he's this legend who hasn't really done much for the last 15 years or whatever, because he'd been kind of doing the chicken in a basket circuit, working men's clubs and all that sort of stuff, I think. Or he'd been out in Vegas and we weren't really aware of him here. And Jonathan Ross brought him back in that ironic sort of sense. And never gone away, has he?
And then people just remembered him. We were at university and they were advertising it like around the campus, probably thinking, we'll get these fucking daft student cunts down there, thinking it's all funny and ironic.
They're all drinking their pound of pints in the afternoon. They'll be so fucking bladdered by tea time, they'll just turn up anyway.
Yeah, and they were right, these unscrupulous tour promoters, because a load of us did go, oh, yeah, let's buy tea, John. So we went down, and I did have, I mean, look, Tom Jones is an amazing performer. You know, with an incredible voice and a presence, so why not? But I suppose we thought that because he'd come back in this sort of rebranded way, that the venue, which was a bit one of Brighton's bigger venues, would be kind of at least partially full with people like us. I think about a group of 6 of us went. We couldn't have been more wrong, mate. We got down there and it was like the 6 of us fucking students, stuck out like a sore thumb. And we were surrounded by the proper knicker-throwing middle-aged women.
I was going to say they'd all be like in their late 40s by that point.
Yeah. There was an older. There was like old women, right?
Were they still
old
throwing the knickers? There.
No, they were sitting very politely and primly. And I remember the auditorium. It was the Brighton. I think it was the Brighton Centre, which is like the biggest venue, really.
Yeah.
I also saw The Prodigy there, which was a contrasting experience. And And everyone was sitting just in very quiet. It was like being at a theatre. And he kept the whole auditorium quite well lit, which is never nice at a gig. If the house lights are kind of on. And he came on and and there was not much of a band or anything. And I just remember him in between each song just doing polite sort of repartee with the audience. I always remember me and my mate still do it because, I don't know, it's just one of those things that sticks out in your mind. Me and my mate, who were there, now still, if any of us drinks a glass of water, fucking weird things you take the piss out of your mates for, right? If someone has a glass of water, the other one has to always go, just going to have a little sip of me water. Because that's what he said between each song, he walked over to the table and said, just going to have a little sip of me water, and had a little sip of his water. And we found that hysterical because, like I said, this was in the era of going to see bands like, whether it was Oasis or The Prodigy or, hard-living bands.
Had Tom lost all of his sort of sexual stagecraft by this point?
He wasn't really being that sexual. We thought it was going to be very kind of rock and roll leather trousers, like, I guess, sort of like thrusting his hips and everyone screaming and going, man. But what I remember is we were obviously pissed. And a friend of mine who is a loudmouth, she was at probably the most pissed and giving it, God, come fucking on, and all that stuff. And people were going fucking mad at us for standing up. Like, that's the sort of type of gig it was. People were telling us to be quiet, telling us to shut up, telling us to sit down, complaining to security, asking for us to be thrown out. But we weren't like, we were just behaving like we just do it at a gig.
Yeah.
We were just shit-faced, but we weren't like, it wasn't like, you know, I was getting my cock out or shitting on the stool, on the seat or something. You're just like, basically, we were just dancing.
But you weren't meant to be there. That kind of energy wasn't supposed to be there because all of the audience were like 45 plus.
Yeah.
You were ruining it.
Yeah. Yeah, we ruined it. But how were we to have known? They shouldn't have marketed it to us. It reminds me of the year before when I'd gone to the World Cup final between Brazil and Italy, and there was and it was all Americans sitting around us, and there was a Brazilian in our bit, and he was getting up and obviously was going mad because he was watching his team in the World Cup final.
Yeah.
But he wasn't going mad. He was getting up and just going, fucking hell, or whatever, in Brazilian.
Yeah.
And the Americans who were there, who must have all just been there on fucking corporate entertainment tickets or whatever, right, didn't really know what it was. They were literally going, sir, if you do not sit down and modify your behaviour, I will ask security for you to be ejected, right? This is unacceptably aggressive, sir, right? And me and my brother, we tapped this woman who was complaining the most. They were all doing it and said, listen, sweetheart, he don't mean nothing by it. He's getting a bit excitable because it's a big football game, see? And she's like, I don't care how big it is. He's being aggressive. He's intimidating me, right? We were like, listen, this is just, honestly, he's a soccer hooligan.
I am going to sue him. I'm going to sue him into the middle of next week for mental endangerment.
His Brazilian ass. I will have his pubic hair removed.
The fucking World Cup final. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Fucking hell.
It was sickening that they had tickets. Also, in the same World Cup final, I'm sure I said this when we did our World Cup rings years ago, but in the same World Cup final, a couple sat in front of us, a man and a woman. There was a throw-in. This is 20 minutes into the World Cup final. Baggio's playing for Italy. Romario's playing for Brazil. And there's a throw-in. And the woman in front of us turns to the bloke and goes, okay, you say they weren't allowed to use their hands. How do you explain that, smart guy? And me and my brother just looked at each other like, it is so sickening that these people have tickets to this game and they don't even know what a throw-in is. And this is the most sought-after fucking ticket in world football.
Yeah.
Jalapeño.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
You know what? World Cup 2026 is Canada, USA, Mexico. I think we should attempt to go to that.
Me and Len have planned our route around North America for that.
Yeah, because me and the boy have planned it already.
We have tickets. So we're
going to get a Winnebago.
Yeah. They call them. Honestly, I'm hoping by that stage, this podcast will be at the stage where someone will pay us to just do the tour.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
And do a podcast from each place, and we'll take our lads with us in the Winnebago in case we can't be bothered some days and we just let them do it instead.
That'll begin the gradual transition when we hand it over to them.
Yeah, to our retirement.
Yeah. Good news, everyone. It's an episode by the boys this week.
Who've got much more energy and more to say than we have.
A bit of swearing. That's Tom Jones. I was just been looking at the lyrics of Cliff Richard's Goodbye Sam, Hello Samantha, and it's all about Cliff transitioning from hanging out with the boys to finding some female love in his life. And he sings, Sam, I'm leaving the gang, so don't come around for me on Sunday. Joe, I want you to know, I'll have to skip the game on Monday. Had a whole lot of fun, but now the time has come. I need the sweet touch of a woman's love.
Oh, I thought you'd say of a woman's bum. That would have been better, wouldn't
it? That might have been the original lyrics.
We've had some fun. I know we've had some fun, but the time has come. I need the sweet touch of a woman's bum.
They might well have been the original lyrics, which were by Jeffrey Stevens, Mitch Murray and Peter Callender. But obviously,
yeah, I had a feeling Cliff hadn't written them himself.
No, they've been changed for radio purposes. Guys, you ought to get wise. There's more to the world than pool and fishing. Easy riding is easy riding is fine. Ooh, mention of easy rider there. Dangerous. But look around, see what you're missing. Girls are waiting in line. And now has come the time. I'm going out and I'm going to get me some. Fucking hell, Cliff. He's turned his back on pool and fishing.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as I understand it, the only sum he'd had at this stage was off of Una Stubbs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's official.
And my mate once worked with Una Stubbs' son, who, by all accounts, was... I mean, my brother worked with him, and he said he was one of the funniest blokes he's ever met in his life. And I mean, that's just a little side note. I've got nothing to add to that, but he always goes on about him. Una Stubbs' his son.
Una Stubbs' son. Oh, right. Okay.
But he would wind him up and always say that Cliff Richard was his dad. Which apparently was a bit of an Achilles heel for this lad.
Fuck off. He'd smash the room up. He was a good
fuck
laugh.
Fuck off, right?
He was a good laugh till you mentioned that Cliff Richard was his dad.
And then you wouldn't want to see him then. He'd really turn nasty. Out. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, guys, it's all very well going to the football and going fishing and even doing a bit of easy riding. But I've got to tell you, sexual intercourse with a woman with a fanny is, I would say, if anything, better. Give it a go. That's all I'm saying.
A woman with an actual functional fanny. It's where it's at.
I've met a lovely girl. Her name's Samantha. She's got a fully functioning fanny. And we've had a lot of fun together. And sure, I miss easy riding and fishing, but I've got to tell you, this is almost as satisfying, guys.
It's a new world to me. It's a world I intend to explore greatly.
I want my next single to be called I Want to Explore Your Fanny.
And that song,
some of the shit we come out with.
That got as high as number six. in the...
I'm not surprised. Sounds fucking brilliant.
For a couple of weeks.
I mean, I haven't heard it, but no. On the lyrics alone, I'd probably buy a copy.
Oh, I'm going to head straight to Spotify and have a listen after this. What else is there? Anything else in that chart that jumps out at you, Sam?
ABC by Jackson 5. Of course, that's... there's not much to say about that, other than I recognise it and it's a good song. But I suppose it falls into category of songs that, yeah, it is good, but in a way it's not because you've heard it too many times. So you're unlikely to just stick it on, are you?
Yeah, exactly. Probably similar with Back Home by the England World Cup squad. That was a number one single. That was fucking huge. That was the first sort of big football single, I think.
Yeah, and all you can think about, for us who weren't alive during that World Cup, for me personally, it's probably the same for you, is that even if you're of a later generation, you're probably aware of it from on fantasy football, when they used to get Jeff Astle to come on at the end and sing it as the outro every week.
Yeah.
Which, especially in its original incarnation, was, and despite the fact I'm not really a fan of David Baddiel much, it was a superb show, that show, at its best.
Yeah.
It was fucking good. And of course, Paul Hawksby, our occasional colleague and friend, was like a key person behind it all was. That. No coincidence, because the bloke's very funny. He's very funny, very clever bloke. Writes for Harry Hill now, so that says it all.
Mm.
And, the ideas they had on that. I mean, just the fact that they had Jeff Astle coming out every week singing Back Home in itself is hilarious.
It's a shame that I can't think of any real show that's sort of took football like that did and made fun of it, because football is so wrapped up in its own pomposity nowadays with the Premier League and everything.
Yeah.
Soccer AM kind of did it a bit, but Soccer AM was never really for me. Don't know. A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the appeal of Soccer AM. Like, sometimes I watch it with Len and he'll really like it. And I think, actually, a lot of people, there's been various hosts over the years, and a lot of people, it boiled down to whether or not they liked the host personally.
Yeah.
And there's been a few different ones. And so you'll hear some people go, I don't like that because of whoever, whoever the host was at that particular time. And that's just personal taste, you know. But actually, if you look at the show, it's good. It's a good idea for a show. You don't get many shows like that anymore,
exactly,
because they...
I mean, am I suggesting...
Just make fun stuff out of it. But it's not as good as...
Am I suggesting that one of the TV networks take us on and allow us to run riot with the football world? Yes, I am. Yes, I am suggesting that.
But you say that, mate. But honestly, when you think that through...
Oh, yeah.
You'd have to leave the house, can't be arsed.
Yeah,
I just cannot be arsed.
No.
Making TV shows, I was talking to... Someone rang me up yesterday who is researching a book for a very well-known journalist. Mm. He's writing a book about Nigel Farage. Yeah. Mm. And he's such a powerful journalist. He's got a researcher working for him. So he doesn't even do it all himself.
Yeah.
Right. And the researcher rang me up and he wanted to speak to me about that time that we pranked Nigel Farage on Sam Delaney's news thing. And it won't surprise you to know that despite the fact that they wanted to ask about all the ins and outs of working RT and Farage and blah, 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 blah. And my wife had said, just tell them what they want to know, but, don't go over the top. It won't surprise you to know I let my mouth run away with me. And I told him lots of stuff that he hadn't even asked about. I gave him unsolicited information, rumour, hearsay, gossip. And then woke up in the night really anxious about the things that I'd said and what the results of them appearing in print might be. But whilst talking about the much lamented rested TV show Sam Delaney's news thing, it got me to thinking about how much of a hassle it was to make, right? And how much making a TV show is a fucking hassle.
It was like...
It's a hassle, mate.
Like 4 days preparation to do half an hour of telly. And loads of people involved and stuff.
And I was so knackered. Like, by the time we got to do it, I've been doing the radio show all week and all sorts of other things. By the time we actually started filming on a Friday, the last place I wanted to be in the world and the last thing I wanted to be doing was that.
Yeah.
Yeah? But we had some good time. But basically, making a TV show in comparison to doing it, this is like how the meetings were that we had in the script writing room beforehand, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What we do now. Them.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't have to fucking write this down. We just do it.
Yeah, we don't want to be on TV.
Thanks for the offer, Sky and Netflix, of me and Andy making a new groundbreaking TV show about football. Right? But thanks, but no, because I like sitting in my rig
doing
this.
We'll just stay here in our little corner of the media vegetable patch. Keep on doing what we're doing. Because it seems to be working.
I'd have to shave. You have to get dressed properly.
Yeah.
You have to get in a fucking car or on a tube or whatever and get up there to the studio in the middle of London. Ugh. For you, I mean, you've got to get on the train all the way. Fuck
that. Awful. Awful idea.
Mind you, I'd probably consider it more appealing if we filmed the whole thing in Sunderland because, you know, that would be more interesting for me. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. Where are we? So we've looked at Back Home. What else is there? There's some songs there which are just cast iron classics now. I mean, you've got like Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon.
Yeah, that's weird actually because this morning I was listening to Six Music and I love the album Bridge Over Troubled Water, right? It's one of my favourite ever albums. And this morning on Six Music, they played a song by, I think it's by Carter, the Unstoppable Sex Machine.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right? Called The Only Living Boy in New Cross.
Yeah.
Which I remember hearing when it came out in the early 90s. And at that stage, I was unfamiliar with the album Bridge Over Troubled Water, other than the hits, you know. And I didn't realise that was a reference to the song The Only Living Boy in New York from this album. And I was just so, as a result of hearing that Carter song, which is not a song I particularly like or dislike, indifferent, I started singing to myself The Only Living Boy in New York and thinking to myself how that was my favourite song on this album. Now that's a song and a half, my friend.
Take your bloody unstoppable sex machine and dismantle it. Because you could never reach the heights of Simon and Garfunkel.
And once you finish dismantling it, smelt it down.
Smelt it.
And turn that smelted record, turn that smelted metal into a record player that you then play Simon and Garfunkel's The Only Living Boy in New York on. But it is a great fucking album. And this is a good song. But my favourite song on it is The Only Living Boy in New York.
Well, my parents,
Andy, do you like this album?
My parents like were, they never had much musical kind of love. I was massively into it, but they had like three albums or something, and one of them was Bridge Over Troubled Water, so it would get, like, it was recorded onto a tape, and it would get played in the car in the absence of anything else. And I didn't get much opportunity to have my choice of music in the car. It was always...
So you'd think, well, that's the best of what's
on
offer.
This is as good as it gets. So then I sort of naturally took against it because it wasn't what I wanted to listen to.
Parent music.
Parent music, exactly. But obviously I've since learned that it's a great album.
Through my parents... That would have been my parents, what the reason I was into it. It's a classic parents
album. I think every household had it, like Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms in the 80s. And then the Beautiful Sounds carried on up the charts in the 90s.
Yeah, it's a brilliant record. I still play it sometimes. And Bridge Over Troubled Water, it's a lovely rousing number, isn't it? It's not much of a single. I'm surprised they released that one as a single, mate.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it's a fucking slow build, isn't it?
It is, but where did it get to? Got to number one.
Got to
three
number
weeks
one.
Of number one. Yeah.
I mean, different times. It's a record like that. A record like that nowadays would be overproduced and made like the sort of song that an X Factor winner sings in the finale.
Yeah. Just mentioning
Dire
Straits. Probably
the sort of song that the fella from Coldplay dreams about.
Well, I was going to say, mentioning Dire Straits there. Dire Straits had a single in, they got number two in about 1982, I think, called Private Investigations. Have you heard it?
Oh, my God.
It's barely there. It barely exists as a tune, and it got a number two.
I've got something to say about the song Private Investigations.
Oh, good.
That's very important.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have time? We're almost at the end of this one.
I think one of the greatest... We're talking about fantasy football there, right? Which I think is one of my favourite TV, like, you know, studio-based sort of TV shows ever. And right up there alongside it as one of the funniest fucking programmes ever. It was Dick and Dom in the Bungalow.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which was one of the most superbly fucking entertaining programmes ever. I mean, people talk about the classics of, like, you know, whatever Tiz was and all these other chaotic kids shows. But I felt it took that and did it better than anyone.
Absolutely.
Had done it.
Absolutely.
Right. Now, there is all of the fucking recurring characters and sketches in it were unbelievably brilliant. But I've got to remember his name. There was one, right? And he was a detective, right? And he was a Geordie.
Harry. Harry. What was his name again?
I'm looking at Private Investigations, Dick and Dom, right?
Yes.
It's one of my favourite all-time sketches. We make the kids watch it sometimes, right? Because obviously it was after we were kids. We were into it when we were in our 20s.
Harry Batt,
right?
That's who it was.
We were in,
Well, I got into it when my daughter was, just after she'd been born, because this was about 2004.
Well, I didn't even have kids when we were just adults. Me and my wife, my good wife, we were just like, when she wasn't even my good wife, but we'd be like living in a flat and, on, you know, hungover on a Saturday morning.
2 hours
stumbled
Saturday
across
morning.
It
was genius, wasn't it?
And we were like, this is relentlessly fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. Everything. We've even got a DVD of Best Bits of it, right?
Yeah.
That we bought when we were like in our 2 3
I
we
have
had
that
kids,
as well.
Right?
Yeah.
So it was our favourite programme.
The Dirty Norris
Files.
And
now we show it.
Yeah.
We show it to the kids. Like, you can imagine, like, Len loves that Bogies game.
Oh, yeah.
Which is probably the most famous thing to come out of it. But some of it, it was so fucking weird.
Mm.
Like, there was a bit up in the fucking loft where there was some sort of geezer talking to the dead with a Ouija board and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, fucking mad stuff. Anyway, they had this Geordie detective with a handlebar moustache who I suppose was vaguely based on Spender, right? And he's called DC Harry Batt. And in one sketch, which you can look up online, he inexplicably is in an interview room, right? Interviewing a criminal, right? And then he gets up and just for no reason, just starts speaking the words really aggressively to Private Investigations. And that's the only reason I'm aware of the song Private Investigations.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fucking superb.
There's loads of Dick and Dom in the Bungalow stuff on YouTube, and I urge everyone who listens to this podcast to go and have a look at it, rifle through it, because it was such
one
a
of
good
the things,
show.
I mean, pretty much everything about it was brilliant. It was almost like as close to a perfect show. There wasn't like bits where, oh, I like that bit, but that bit's a bit shit. Like, so if you watch Shocker AM, similar type of show, for me, if I tune into Soccer AM, there'll be bits, oh, I really like it when they do that bit, you know, when they do Showboat or whatever. I'm not so keen on that bit. But Dick and Dom in the Bungalow, from the moment it started to the moment it ended, was just creative, imaginative, hilarious, brilliant. And one of the things I liked was that they had a dog in the studio, but for no reason.
Yeah.
There was just a dog that they would let loose in the studio and it was allowed to do what it wanted.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't always be on camera, but whenever it did run into shot, Dick and Dom would just point and shout, "Dog!"
So there we go. That's the end of this episode. I think we've covered the chart pretty much. We were going to do
We Mungo didn't even talk Jerry's about Mungo Jerry, but with one
summertime.
Day we'll do that in History Box.
We will do, yeah. Put that on the list, absolutely. Right, great. Thanks very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.